This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Dino Tripodis. Tonight on the podcast, when I die, I want people to laugh hysterically. I'll explain that tonight on Whiskey Business. Hi, I'm Dino Tripodis, and welcome to Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. I don't know. I'd have to ask my mother how I came into this world, if I came in crying or screaming when I finally was birthed. I don't know how I came into this world, but damn it, I know how I want to go out.
And?
I want to go out. When I go out, I want it to be a party. I don't want it to be some maudlin affair. Oh, he died too young. Well, first of all,
Yeah, that's too late.
You already outlived the odds.
We passed that benchmark.
Yeah. People that had odds on how long I was going to lost money. So
always over on you.
Yeah, always take the over on me. I have plans. I have a working will which constantly keeps shifting and changing. I got to settle it and fix it and like decide that's it because I have things that I want to do. Now, why are we talking about death? Well, tonight on the podcast, we're going to have author James Haggerty on, who's got a new book out called Yours Truly, A Guide to Writing Life Stories. We'll meet James here in just a little bit, but he has written over 900 obituaries for the Wall Street Journal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and his philosophy on life is just that life is about living it. And some of the stories that are there go completely missed. And undiscovered. Sure. Everybody focuses on the tragedy of mm-hmm. the death. Mm. But what about the life, boys?
Right?
What about the life?
I love it. Right. I got to say, we've had guests from A to Z.
Right.
And this would be O, technically.
Yeah.
Obituary writer.
There you go.
I have more questions.
Well, it's going to be an A. I could say
author. Author.
Yeah. Who happens to also have been an obituary writer?
Well, I just like to throw it in the middle of the alphabet somewhere.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Wait,
okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. pen and paper person. Anyway, my point is that I've had more questions spinning around in my head today about what to ask James than probably any other guest in a long time that we've had.
Okay,
so you're excited. Good. So probably forgot them.
My quick question to all of you before we get started and do the business and also introduce the guest bottle this evening is what do you think would be on your tombstone, Chip? What do you want on it?
My tombstone will be... fiercely loyal friend.
Oh, good one.
That's good.
Good one.
Nice. Like that.
Fiercely loyal.
I think I'm going to be like just one of those really big, obnoxiously gaudy, like black Venetian marble. It just says Hansberry. Like, so big that everybody Hansberry. In the cemetery can see it.
So everybody can see it, but nobody can know if, like, you know, mm-hmm. very ornate.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Was
yeah.
he a rich man?
Yeah,
was
yeah,
he
yeah.
Cain.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah, yeah Cain.
Like, yeah.
Whitney?
6'9", stop fucking asking.
That's it.
That's been a question that has plagued you.
Oh, if I had a nickel.
For a nickel.
Dude.
How tall are you?
Oh, and
every day.
Yeah.
And yours?
I think mine's going to be very simple. I think it's just going to say, oops. Because I was not anticipating it. All right. So tonight we're going to get into the book and everything that we want to ask Mr. James Haggerty here in just a moment. So let's do a little bit of business first. Chip, who's doing the business?
Chip, doing the business.
Chip is doing the business?
Again?
I'll give it a shot. I didn't rehearse this or anything.
It's the best time.
All right. Hey, don't forget to reach out to all your social medias. Like, find us on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram.
Yeah.
WhiskeyBusinessPod.com
with
Dino Tripodis. And don't forget on Facebook too. No, on
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on Facebook.
It's a Facebook page. Yeah, don't forget on YouTube to hit that subscribe button.
Subscribe.
In fact, hit the alert button and let that, you know, let's get that alert button going.
That's a YouTube Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis.
That's right. On YouTube. That's the way it is. And on Facebook.
We're available wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. But mostly we're brought to you by the Evergreen Network.
Oh, Evergreen Podcast Network.
Yeah, yes. Friends at Evergreen. Yeah, been very generous with us.
Uh-huh. And I don't know what's going on, boys, but
our numbers are up.
We came out of the gate in 2023 firing. Ooh. So
maybe everybody's listened to every other podcast. Maybe. So they're really like, hey, well, let's try this one.
Or maybe they went alphabetically and they finally got to the W's.
That was it.
Maybe. Who knows? All that stuff that Chip said. Our guest bottle tonight. This is something that I'm trying for the first time. Apparently, John Whitney's already had it. Yeah,
I was in Indiana last month.
He was in Indiana. He had it, but he never shared it. This is a bottom shelf beauty called Benchmark, but this is Benchmark Bonded, so it's got to be 100 proof bonded. So, I'll be very curious to see what they've done to improve what I think is already a very reasonable and good tasting whiskey that just happens to live on the bottom shelf of your liquor store. And our guest,
$20.
And how much was that?
$19.99, baby.
Great. Oh, that's worth it.
Yep.
Because regular Benchmark's what, like $12.
Yeah. It's a little bit more, but higher proof. I think this is going to be a bourbon bargain. And I've never had this particular one. I know nothing about it. I know about Benchmark. We know where it comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah, and everything like that. And we'll share that when we have a sip. But it's brought to you by. Jeff Gage, realtor at the Costigan and Gage team at Remax One. Jeff Gage.
It's a buyer's market. Actually, I don't know what it is.
I don't know
so he can help with either selling.
It's a housing market.
He knows what kind of market it is. That's his job.
It's a market in which you need to live in a home.
You can contact our buddy Jeff at 614-638-8711 or email him at jeffgage@remax.net.
Gotta get Jeff. Gotta get Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeffy.
The most amusing realtor that you could ever find.
That's true. He's
That's
fun.
True.
Yeah. He'll improv your way into a home.
He will. He will improv your way into a house.
That's true.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome our guest, Mr. James Haggerty. Would you come to the table, please? Thank you very much. Dun, dun, dun. Thank you so much. Thank you, first of all, for being brave, because you and I have not met before this evening. We've only been exchanging emails. And unfortunately... unfortunately, because what we were trying to do as by the time this podcast drops next week, it'll be shared by the thousands and millions of people that potentially see it. But tomorrow he's actually in town doing a book signing. So in advance of that, let me just say congratulations, and I hope it goes well. It's at the Book Loft. So even though the signing is tomorrow, when people are watching this particular podcast, we want to encourage you, if you miss the book signing, to go to the Book Loft and pick up his book, because it'll be available there.
The Book Loft is an amazing place to go and visit anyway. Have you ever been there, James?
Today for the first time.
Isn't it incredible? Awesome.
Yeah, I got lost.
Yeah. It's cavernous. And are you a book lover, per se?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah? You know, what kind of books do you collect them?
My favorite is probably memoirs, autobiographies, biographies. But I like what people write about themselves.
Mm. And we're going to get into that too, because the obituaries and everything else about that, when they write about themselves, there are a lot of fascinating stories about fascinating people who aren't necessarily famous people. Not all memoirs need to be about somebody famous or infamous, for that matter.
Definitely
there
not.
Are some heartbreaking tales, people that are written by people who have just lived an incredible life that we know nothing about. Is that what intrigues you about memoirs?
What I like about it is that it's directly from the source. And it's true that some people will exaggerate and cover up and lie a bit, but generally I find that people are pretty honest about their defects, mistakes, and sort of want to address those. Whereas if you ask their family what they did, they'll try to cover up all that stuff.
Mm.
So I think you really get a truer picture, usually, directly from the person.
It's interesting you mentioned family, because a couple years ago, I wrote a four-part memoir article for a Greek magazine that covers a lot of Icarians. That's the island that my family's from. And it goes all over the world. And I wrote this four-part series. And my mother was very upset. My mother, who's still living, was very upset because I was sharing things about my childhood living in Greece in 1969. And while I didn't say anything damaging about my mother at all, in fact, she comes out of it. She comes out of this four-part article a saint, just amazing. She didn't care for the fact that I was sharing intimate details about our lives back then. She didn't think that people had a reason or a need to read that. And she was upset. She was upset. The article was very well received. It was four parts over four quarters. And I'm glad I wrote it. And it's inspired me to actually want to write a complete and full-blown memoir about that, you know, called A Boy Without a Country. And back in 1969, when we moved from a suburb of Chicago to an island in Greece. And it just completely changed my life.
Yeah, yeah, do it. Because if you don't tell your story, your family's going to do it, and they'll probably make a hash of it.
Yeah.
they'll probably whitewash you and cover up all of your sins and omissions and craziness, and you'll sound boring.
Yeah,
that's true.
So you've probably told your family lots of great stories about things that happened to you, but they're not going to remember all the details. They're going to get half of the stuff wrong, and it's going to be vague. It won't be the same.
Do you find
so you got to preserve that story, just like you write a will to take care of, to make sure that what you want happens with your money after you die. You should do something to ensure that your stories,
your legacy,
are preserved.
Do you have a journal? Do you personally do a journal?
I don't keep a journal, but when I was 18, 19, leaving home, my mom told me that civilized people write home once a week. And that was one occasion I listened to
That's
my
great.
Mom, and once I wrote once. Home every week for about 30 years, and my mom kept all of those
That's
letters.
Great. Wow. That's amazing.
It's a stack about 2 feet high. So that was a good discipline. Now, most people are not going to do that, but you can take some notes here and there. You can save some of your better social media postings. You can record things.
See, I am a journal writer, and upstairs, like, I have the comedy journals upstairs that from when I started doing stand-up, that I started from the first open mic up to the point where I took the job at Say 95. So they go from like 1988 to 1994.
So and those jokes kind of tell your story.
There's jokes in there, but there's also stories in there.
Mm.
And some of them should stay in the journal.
Well, you don't have to include everything.
The director's cut.
Right.
But it's interesting, when we talk about, because we're going to be talking about death here and obituaries. My friend Jamie says that when you die, the first thing I'm doing is going upstairs and taking all of the stuff that you didn't consider worthy enough to be published, and I'm going to publish it.
Right.
Posthumously. I'm gonna,
we're our own worst critic.
And do that, yeah. But there's a lot of stuff up there. There's a lot of stuff up there. And you are now writing this book, or wrote this book, called Yours Truly, A Guide to Writing Life Stories. Let's talk about the actual book, and then I want to get into the whole obituary thing as well, because I find that to be fascinating. But let's talk about the book for a second. Yours Truly, what's it all about?
It's about why and how you should tell your story in some fashion or another. You could write a whole memoir. You could write a few pages. You could record something. You could just annotate your photo album, if nothing else. But you should try to preserve a few stories about things that, the important things that happened to you, the funny things that happened to you, the strange things that happened to you, and what you learned from them, what you thought about them.
Now, is this a how to do it book, or is this a compilation of stories?
It's both. It tells you how to do it, but it also gives a lot of examples, many of them taken from obituaries I've written.
Okay.
And also from my own personal experience of dealing with my family and my own story.
Okay. So have you written your own memoir yet, or?
Well, in this book, I include an obituary that my family could use if they want to spring for $50 or whatever it costs in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. But but I also started writing a very long explanation of everything that happened to me, or everything I think is worthwhile, just in case my kids are ever interested. It's not that likely, but it's possible. Because I wish my dad had done that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When my dad died, we wrote a typical obituary about him. There were facts and dates and survivors. But there was nothing about his personality. And I feel like we totally failed him. And my dad never did anything, never wrote anything about himself.
What'd your father do?
He was a newspaper editor.
Okay.
So, I mean, he should have been capable.
That's but so funny. There was nothing. Yeah. Nothing documented.
Yeah. And I realized that, you know, I don't even know why my dad became a journalist. Even though that's pretty important to my family history. Hmm. And now it's too late for me to ask him.
So when you started writing, was your father still living?
No.
No.
Well, I mean, he died in 1997. I began writing obituaries 7 years ago. Yeah, 7 years ago. So 2016. When my dad died, I'd never thought about writing obituaries, but I should have thought about it a bit.
Mm-hmm. You never thought about writing obituaries, so how does one launch that career? So of writing obituaries,
you know, it's usually the last thing that most journalists would want to do, because it's considered something formulaic and dull and dreary. But I was based in London for a while, and the British papers had some very entertaining obituaries that were warts and all. You know, they told you funny things that happened, strange things that happened, terrible habits, along with the good things that happened. And I found myself reading these obituaries about people I'd never heard of, and I thought, it would be fun to write those. These are good stories.
Don't obituaries, I mean, the you always think about the... I see short ones and I see long ones.
Right, yeah.
And so...
And the long ones, just like you say, a list of names.
Yeah.
Not always, so but... Lines. Yeah.
There's that part of it as well. And I hear kind of like the sanitized version of what they did in life and how great they were and how wonderful they were.
Right. A lot of them sound like it's a nomination for sainthood. Right?
Yeah.
And there are all these cliches that people use. You know, they were always surrounded by family. And what, you know, why were they surrounded? I mean, it's like, come out with your hands up. Were they afraid that you were going to leap out of your deathbed and try to make a break for the door?
Uh-huh.
And if you also notice, they always were devoted to their family above all else.
Above all else, yeah.
You, what about the people who hated their family?
Right.
Yeah.
You never read about those.
Right. Because it's like, so, yeah.
I mean, so, but this is why I don't like the word obituary, and I prefer life story, because for obituary, there's such a low bar. Most people don't expect very much. They think that that's fine if it's just a few nice phrases and facts and dates. But I think that's not good enough. It might be good enough just to have a little notice to tell people when the funeral is going to be held. But I think you should leave something better than that for your family and friends and for people not yet born who might be interested right. in you someday.
Mm-hmm. How long can a obituary life story be? Like, especially now that's online. I mean, are you confined to, you know, this many lines, or could you just turn in a 9-page?
I always thought it was like, especially if it's in the newspaper, I thought it was what the family wants to pay.
Right.
Right.
That's what it is usually now, how much you want to pay. And so if you want to pay a lot of money, you could have it as long as you want. But practically speaking, you know, it's probably not going to be too long. And I think that's fine, because the whole world is not going to want 900 pages on you. Your family, though, your grandchildren, they might. Or they might like 6 pages. They like something. Because, you know, you look at these death notices, which is what most people get, paid death notice. 30 or 40 years from now, that will probably be the only trace of them. If somebody wants to look back, what did my great-grandfather do?
You'll find
three or four sentences.
Yep. Yeah.
No sense of the personality, what he was trying to do, why, what he thought about it.
Do you get commissioned, or maybe that's the wrong word, commissioned, hired to do, or have you been approached by people like, when I die, I want you to write my obituary?
Occasionally, but that... I can't really do that unless it's somebody I would never write about in the Wall Street Journal. Uh-huh. And I don't really have time for it because I'm busy writing about people for the Wall Street Journal. So there are people who do that for a living. You can get somebody to write your obituary and do it in advance. So if you want to tell your story, but you don't want to write it, you could hire somebody.
Uh-huh. So the obituary, over 900 obituaries in the Wall Street Journal. So was that on a freelance basis, or do you actually work for the Wall Street Journal?
No, I've been a staff reporter and editor for the Wall Street Journal for over 40 years.
Okay.
The last 7 years, this has been my assignment.
Assignment like, oh, shucks, Dad. Or like you said, this is something that I look forward to doing.
No, this is something I volunteered to do. I really wanted to do.
All right. Well, no, it's the thing nobody wants to do.
Oh yeah, most journalists don't want to do it. And you know, when I used to cover real estate and financial markets, things like that, a lot of times I'd call up big shots and they wouldn't return my call. But now I've got to tell you that lots of people are dying to have me write about them. Yeah. So there's that big advantage, you know.
Yeah.
And they don't call you back afterwards to complain either.
Can we backtrack just for a second?
Sure.
You said that your father died before you started writing obituaries or life stories.
Yeah.
Have you gone back since you've been doing this job, and written one for your father?
In my book, I do write a chapter about my dad. Okay. And I include a lot of the stuff that I should have included the first time. I give a sense of his personality. Although I also note in that chapter that it's frustrating how little I know about my dad.
Oh, okay.
I think that's fairly common because as an obituary writer, I'm always talking to the grown children of people who have died. And it's very striking how much they want that story to be preserved, but how little they really know about it.
Right.
They're missing a lot of key details. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you'll say, well, I see your dad went through dental school 10 years, and then he became a chef. Why was that? And they say, gee, that's a good question. I never asked him. Hmm. I think a lot of people, they just sort of take their parents' life as a given. Mm-hmm. They don't wonder, well, why did mom or dad do that? And what did they think about it? Right. And how did they do that?
Yeah.
Do you think, and I guess I'm asking a question to try to explain myself. Do you think people who do journal, and like you said, you had the letters that you wrote to your mother for 30 years, or people like myself that have kept a record of things that they've done over the course of their life, do you think it's because they want to leave something behind? Because sometimes I think like, oh man, I should just burn all this. And, you know, because I've not gone through it, and there might be some things that in there that, you know, because I was very honest and open about, you know, things that have happened while I was on the road that might have involved drugs or et cetera, et cetera.
Something not you, the most, you not might the be most ashamed your daughter things. To read
right.
about.
Right. You know, but they were honest, and you know, and the result is here I am doing a podcast on a on a Wednesday night,
about
and everything's fine. But do you think that people that do that, that keep a record, that keep journals, do you think they do it because they want people to find that once they're gone?
Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. I mean, some people do destroy their journals, or they've just done it for themselves. But I think typically people want to be remembered and understood to some extent. So I think that's why most people do it. And a surprising number of people who are not at all famous do write book-length stories of their life.
And you have a good perspective. I think when I think of journal, I'm like, oh, dear diary, today I got so mad at me and my wife fought about blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't have to be that. You could just talk about something funny that happened at work today or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, if you're writing a journal, you can write down everything that happened if you like Samuel Pepys is fascinating. But you don't have to. And most people are not going to take that much time and effort. But I think it's good to set aside a bit of time once a month or so and think of some of the
milestones.
Yeah, some of the interesting things that happen. And when you find yourself telling your friends a story about something that happened to you, that's a sign that it was important and interesting and maybe funny. And you should keep a copy of that for yourself. I put it in a little file called My Life.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes because, you know, I have the same mysteries. My father died 17 years ago. I was not close to my father. And I've spent most of my adult life trying to figure that man out. And still, 17 years later, I'll come across something from a family member or find something or hear something about my father that makes me scratch my head and go, wow, really? You know, one of the stories I heard at a wedding recently was, and it caught me off guard. And I go, yeah, your father was crazy. I go, yeah, I know. He is pretty out there. And she goes, no, you're not hearing me. Your father was insane, not fun loving, crazy, wacky. Mm-hmm. She's like, your father had an issue. And I'm like, and I'm hearing that for the first time. Mm. And that puts me down a rabbit hole and wants me to rediscover, like, what are they talking about? And I won't get into all the personal details, but I started to find some things that were medically, unstable about him, which then all of a sudden connected to something else. And maybe that's why he did that. And maybe that's why he did this and so forth and so on. And then you start to wonder, like, well,
maybe you're like,
maybe that's it. What's bread in the bone?
Hereditary.
What's bread in the bone? What's in the DNA? My sister and I were talking about this the other day. We have some medical things that have popped up in our later years that apparently come from our father's side of the family that we have no knowledge about. Mm-hmm. My mother, I know. Mm-hmm. You know, we got all that covered. We know the history. But my father, mysteries. And I like to solve mysteries. So I wonder if that's why I write. So when I die, there's no mystery. There it is. That's what I was thinking. That's what I was doing. And that's how I felt about this. And now you know.
Is it a generational thing? Like, I'm the millennial here of the group. I could see my parents doing that, but I couldn't see their parents being journal writers, being open about their feelings, being open about their, and I don't know, maybe it's just my family, but I just feel like maybe it's becoming more and more commonplace to do this.
Yeah, I think it probably has in the past few generations. I mean, baby boomers are not too shy about talking about themselves, and today young people reveal all kinds of stuff to the entire world.
Right.
Yeah. Oversharing.
Right.
Social media.
And oversharing can be a problem too, especially, sure, you know, something that's going to be, you hope is going to be kept. You want to think about what you're putting in there. You may be willing to confess all kinds of sins, but you've got to think, if I write about this, is this going to really hurt somebody? So I think you want to write about it in a way that maybe lets you acknowledge that you did something wrong and learn something, but you're not incriminating anybody else or revealing something that's really going to hurt somebody's feelings or crush your kids or whatever.
Let's take just a break here to discuss the whiskey that we're having tonight. Are you a big whiskey drinker, James, per se, a bourbon drinker? Is this in your wheelhouse, whiskey?
I'm an occasional whiskey drinker. I used to drink more. I once threw half a bottle of Johnny Walker Black into the South China Sea. And
because?
That's sort of my one claim to fame in the whiskey world.
Why'd you throw it?
Well, it was a party on a boat. And people were having more and more fun, and they were passing around this bottle, and they were all sort of on the edge of the boat. And it was getting dark, and I was afraid I was going to have to dive into the sea to rescue somebody. So I just grabbed the bottle and threw it out.
We were a bit like, oh no!
No!
Yeah, I wasn't too popular.
A bottle of Johnny Walker.
But nobody died.
The next day they were so hungover they didn't remember.
Yeah.
Okay, so. So back in the day, you probably imbibed more than you do now. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Or?
Yeah, I do like whiskey. I just got in the habit of drinking beer for some reason.
See, I don't drink as much beer as I used to drink.
Because isn't that the iconic trope, you know, the newspaper riding with the bottle of whiskey in his drawer?
Yeah, my dad was old-fashioned newspaper man. He always drank Canadian whiskey.
Mm-hmm. Well, Canadian whiskeys are getting... very popular right now. There's some Canadian whiskeys that are doing very well that we forget about our brothers up north, but they're putting out some good product.
This is another thing I forgot to ask him: why Canadian whiskey? I remember that if somebody drank Scotch, he thought they were kind of snobbish.
Huh. See, because I used to be a confirmed scotch drinker, and then
that's what I became because I had to be different from my dad.
Of course. Uh-huh. You had to be. Oh, so you did drink scotch.
Yeah, before I threw it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So what was he? Was he a Canadian whiskey guy? Did he have a like Crown Royal or Seagram's or?
Yeah, those.
Yeah. Did he smoke? Was he a smoker?
My dad went to work 365 days a year.
Wow.
And I was like, he's so dedicated. It's amazing. Even on Christmas, he goes in the office. Finally, we figured out he wanted to have a cigarette. Wow. And he told my mom 30 years ago that he'd quit smoking. So
the office. She knew. She had to know. She knew.
She kind of knew, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime I've tried to, you know, every time I've tried to quit smoking, and then it's how's it not smoking going? Okay. Great. Like, yeah, they know when you smoke, especially when you stop smoking, and then you get that first cigarette back after like a month or 2 months. It's like it covers you like a blanket. Like when you're smoke free for like a month, you can tell you've quit smoking, and then you light one up and have one. It just reeks.
Yeah,
it's all over you. Yeah. So he wasn't pulling any wool over anybody's eyes.
Well, he was for, at least mine for a long time.
Oh man.
I thought you were gonna say like a blanket of like a comfy blanket that covers you and keeps secure.
Well, that too. Physically and metaphysically.
No, I drink and I smoke, and one of them's got to stop before it's all
said. So, what do we think about this benchmark bonded?
Oh, this benchmark bottle, I kind of gave you a little like, ooh,
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah,
it's good. The benchmark label. This is one of the bottom shelf whiskeys from the good folks at Buffalo.
Yeah,
at Buffalo Trace. Yep. This is their bargain. Bottom shelf whiskey, like I said, normally the regular benchmark, which isn't bad at all, goes for like 12, 13 bucks a bottle. Mm-hmm. This one is bonded, bottle and bond, which is 100. It has to be, means it has to be 100 proof.
It tastes like 100 proof right away. It was it smacked me in my face right off the bat.
Yeah,
I didn't find it to be harsh. I picked up some cinnamon in there. Little hints of cinnamon. And I think if you're looking for bargain bottles, people, everyday pours, we like everyday pours. There's a lot of fancy bottles up there that are expensive and rare and so forth. When it comes right down to it, you know, if you're drinking something every day, you want it to be reasonable. So I give a thumbs up to
not too sweet.
The benchmark bonded.
I like sweet, but sometimes it can be too sweet.
Mm-hmm. It's too sweet.
They also have other expressions out. They've got like a barrel strength, and they've also got a batch.
Really?
Yeah, single. Yeah.
When you found all these in Indiana?
Yeah, I bought two of them.
Two of them?
But I didn't
buy
the third.
You're just incriminating yourself even more because we didn't share any of this find.
I took a picture of it and showed it to you guys.
You took a picture.
We were out for like almost a month.
Let me tell you what sharing your whiskey really means on Whiskey Business. It's not a photo on Instagram. There are three questions you think that people should ask themselves. And I found them to be fascinating because I was trying to answer them in my own head as well. Question one, what am I trying to do with my life? You said there's three questions. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking about writing your life story, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it's sort of provide a framework. And
right.
Help you think about it.
That first question as you're putting it together, why is that the first question? Is that just a good starter? And does it change with depending on where you're at in life? If a 20-year-old were to be asked that question as opposed to a 60-year-old.
Well, yeah, it would certainly change. But I think I just thought that these were good questions to think about in sort of assessing somebody's life or understanding it. First, you want to know what they were trying to do. And it's a good question for us to ask ourselves from time to time, whether we're writing about ourselves or not.
All right, Hansberry, what are you trying to do with your life?
As you're sitting there, I go, "Oh shit, I gotta get this." I don't know.
Seriously, let's put the coals in the fire.
Well, you know, I would like to say something about entertaining and sharing the arts. Something to that nature.
You know? Want to? But yeah, think about it. Answer it.
I am, because when I was 20, I wanted to be, you know, the next, you know, rock star, right? Sure. But now it's like, well, I've settled into this cool gig radio and podcasting. It's like, it's not exactly what I thought it was, but it's still a cool gig. And I'm doing my, doing this creative, whatever the hell this is. I'm trying to make it sound like a lot cooler than it really is.
And the reason I asked you that, because, you know, because you're younger than me. And when I read that question for the first time, I said, what am I trying to do with my life? And it wasn't so much a job. It's what I wanted the end result to be.
Well, and right. I guess that's what I'm kind of getting at, too, is it's, that's how I'm lucky, because I've always wanted to be a creative person. And now I'm lucky enough to be able to do that as a job, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then as I've got kids, it would be changed completely, too, because now I would feel obligated to wrap them into it somehow.
Yeah. So when you pose that question to people, James, do you know, like we just had this discussion right here, it means two different things to two different people. What are you trying to do with your life? Or did you mean it to be kind of a wide interpretation, or were you looking for specifics when you asked that question?
I wanted to be a wide interpretation, I just would like to know what people are trying to do. It could be a complicated or a simple answer.
And is it a simple answer for you? I mean, is this an answer that you, a question that you've asked yourself?
Yeah, and I don't have anything very profound to say. I think when I was young, I didn't have high aspirations. I wanted to be a newspaper reporter, and I wanted to be able to make a living at that. Mm-hmm. And I think I wanted to have a family. I wasn't expecting or, you know, aspiring to be famous or rich. So in that sense, I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah, I would say so. And then the question
that was
is...
my problem. I started out with highest, biggest rock star in the world, and I just kind of had to settle for...
You got to have an idea of where you want to go and just try to be creative along the way, and maybe you'll get there, but be happy with everything else.
Well, let's stick with the millennial, because the second question that James has for you after you just answered the first one is why?
Oh, God. I mean, this is like, you're like you said, this is a good midlife conversation to have, too, because... I think I get gratification when people... I like it when people pat me on the back. Like I feel, successful when,
validation.
Yeah. Validation. Thank you. That's the word I was
Validation is important.
I thrive on validation. Yes.
You listening to all this? Are you analyzing all this? So if you were, you know, God forbid, if something were to happen to this boy tomorrow, you'd be able to,
I'll be ready.
Yeah. You'll be writing about it. Okay. And his third question, right. I love these questions. I'm saving these and applying them to a lot of things. The question is, and how's it all working out?
That's the third question.
And how's it working out? How's it going? Those dreams going?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's all perspective. Because, you know, you look at the 20-year-old version of me, I go, well, what the hell are you doing? But then... when I really think about it, like, I went to college to get a job in radio. Well, what did I do? I got a job in radio. I got married to have a nice home and a beautiful wife and kids. Well, that's what I did. So, I think it's working out as planned. I just didn't think I had realistic expectations. Not that realistic equals bad or less than. It's just...
I think we forget sometimes about the simple little successes in life that just happen and are. You've got a beautiful wife. You got beautiful kids. That's a success story right there.
Right. And the more and more I get older.
It may not have been part of your life plan.
Right. I just don't screw up their life is part of my plan now, too.
Yeah. These questions are, I find them very simple and yet fascinating because they can go in so many areas. And it sparks conversation.
Yeah.
Whitney, would you heard those questions. You probably started thinking about it in the back of your head.
What are the questions again?
What am I trying to do with my life?
Oh, okay. Trying to be good to my wife and my child, my son. Do good work. And if things go beyond my expectations because I try to do good work, then good. If not, that's okay too, because I'm still happy with what I'm doing.
Okay.
That's simple enough.
Is that honest?
Yeah, I think so. For the most part, I've tried. You know, you always try.
I've tried
a lot of different things, and some have worked out and some haven't. But, hey, man, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? That's an old saying, but it's true. It's absolutely
that's
true.
What I admire about you, D, is like you are never stop.
You're still like you're still taking shots. Away. And it's not about fame and it's not about fortune. But I do. You ask me, what am I trying to do with my life? And I can tell you right now, I just want to leave some sort of mark.
Mm-hmm.
I want to leave some sort of legacy. Doesn't have to be a huge world renowned legacy, but I want something of significance left behind that says I was here.
Yep.
And that's, you know, and why? I think it goes back to what you said, James. Why? Because I don't want people to have those questions, mm-hmm. like you said with your father. There wasn't any document or anything. Why? I don't want people to have questions.
Sad thought.
Why? Mm-hmm. I want them to know something or have something to hold on to. And as far as how it's working out, how's it working out?
Not bad. I mean, I'm employed. I'm not embarrassed about anything I've ever done.
No.
Well, so that's okay.
That's saying a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're well. I mean, you know, I did work on some pretty schlocky movies back in my 20s.
Well, so
but
did Dino. But you're at a different point. As an empty nester, I wonder if it was is another kind of benchmark for things to benchmark for things to
change.
You know what I mean? Because everything's different. You know what I mean? You're not concerned about taking care of your child who lives in your home anymore. I mean, well.
I'm not. No comment.
Okay. Now, while we're having this conversation, here's what I'm doing. I'm watching you, and you're just listening. And
yeah,
as a writer, as a journalist, as a and so forth, is that a big part of it? Do you do a lot of quiet observing, and are you mentally taking notes as we speak?
I do a lot of listening.
Yeah, you have to.
I also do a lot of talking, I find, you know, the older I get, too. So I'm always looking for ideas, story ideas. I'm interested in people. And whenever I meet anybody, I want to know why they're doing what they're doing. You know, if someone's a plumber, I want to know, well, why did you say to be a plumber?
So let's turn the tables for a second.
Can I answer again?
You want to be a plumber? You want to be a plumber?
There's a big shortage of plumbers.
There is a huge shortage of plumbers.
Trade skills.
There's a huge shortage in trade professions.
So the question is, why aren't you a plumber?
Why aren't you a plumber? You might be more successful as a plumber. You don't know.
Okay, so turn the tables on. Let's, you know, I've been asking these questions. You ask some questions.
Oh, God.
Okay.
If you got if there's been anything that's been running through your mind, like first of all, like what the hell am I doing here?
Well, that's already a given.
That one was probably the first one that popped out of your head. But did you have questions that as you're sitting here with three strangers talking about your book again, yours truly, that's available everywhere, right? As we speak,
everywhere
as we speak.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Well, I neglected to say that the Washington Post has it as one of the 10 noteworthy books published in December, famous for finding fascinating stories in the lives of people who weren't so much. Oh, yes, yeah. Nice. So the Washington Post,
Bezos.
Where did you come on? The number one or number 10? Or
they didn't really rank it. Okay, right. I don't think I was number one.
You're in the mix.
So, yeah, as you're sitting here and watching these three idiots, or if you count Chip in the back there, you know, what kind of questions would you have for us if you were writing something?
Oh, God.
What would you ask?
Well, I would ask you why you do whatever you do. So I'm always interested in that. I'd be interested in hearing what you think about writing your own story. Have you ever thought about writing your story?
I have, yeah. Actually, I have. But there's some people that are still alive that I just don't want to, you know what I mean? It's like kind of you have to tiptoe around it. But I've been taking notes because there's some early life stuff in Dayton that I could probably talk about.
Mm-hmm. His father was in broadcasting, so he's got a lot of fascinating stories about his dad. Mm-hmm. And he lost his dad young in life.
Yeah, he was 18.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, there's got to be all kind of.
My grandfather worked for CBS News in New York.
See?
I didn't know that.
See? Yeah.
I didn't know that, John. We've been friends for 30 years.
He worked the assignment desk. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah,
it was a big deal. Yeah, that's his whole point.
You're a custodian of a lot of family history, not just your own. That it would be good to make sure that
down.
Yeah, it's set down somehow.
Yeah. Someday.
You can write it down.
I mean, a lot of people, they wait till it's too late, or a lot of people will at some point, you know, the son maybe is 50 and the dad is 80 and the son will sit down with the dad and with it, and I'll record. He'll ask questions and record the answers and it can go on for hours. The problem is then this tape just gets lost somewhere. I know.
Guilty of that. Yeah.
So
yeah.
People have to. It's a good idea to have these recorded conversations, but there are some things you should think about. First is interviewing is not just asking a question and writing down the answer and then going to the next question. Because when you ask people a question, usually you don't get the whole answer. Often they wander off in another direction, and that may be fascinating. So you want to let them wander, but then you have to pull them back and get them to answer the question, which might require asking it several times. The other thing is, after you get done, you should make a transcript so that you know where it is. And you should go through that transcript and edit it so that you can explain things. Because when we're talking to people we know, we talk in shorthand. But two generations from now, you know, they're going to say we were mentioning Frank and Bill. They'll say, well, who's Frank?
Yeah.
So you want to make it worthy of being understood 50 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with StoryCorps on the NPR project?
Yes, that's a great idea.
It's basically that. They go around with a little booth and record people telling stories. Right. They have a website that gives you questions, the suggestions to ask.
Yeah,
there's
it's
a podcast.
It's
the Holocaust Project? Is it similar?
Very fascinating.
But yeah, it's the same thing. I used to be in that a little bit into that more. I lived in Chicago and it was a big kind of thing there. I have recordings of my grandpa, of my mom that you do there. And I go, okay, well, got that done. And they're just, you know.
Isn't that the reason I had
on my phone
at the time, 82, I think, your old mother on the podcast?
Yeah,
mother on the podcast. And it was funny to have her on because she was amusing, delightful, but she was also guarded because while she was talking to me and I was asking questions, my sister was in the back on that couch where your lovely wife is sitting, and my sister would be like, no, not true.
Yeah,
she's lying.
You don't want to do it in a group. You want to do it one-on-one, I think, because people will not be as open if somebody else is listening.
But at the same token, I'm just like, I'm glad I have that.
Oh yeah,
that shared moment.
Yeah, so much better than nothing.
Yes, right. Where my mother and I were engaged in something and doing something together, and it was fun, and it was heartwarming, and yeah, I mean, most of the stuff she told was true, but there was a couple things like she just kind of glossed over, not so much lied. It's like I don't remember. I don't think I remember that. No, that type of thing. So. I got a couple more questions before we start wrapping things up. Who's going to write your obituary?
Well, I've already written one. I put it in my book. So
that's yours? That's the one you want?
I don't know.
Is that fair to write your own obituary?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What percentage of people write their own obituaries?
1 or 2%, maybe. It's not uncommon. I think it's fair. It's a good idea. But, you know, I think it's more important just to think about you don't have to think about writing your obituary. Just think about preserving some stories that are going to be interesting and helpful and entertaining for your family and friends in the future. Now, when I die, whether Lorraine will spring $50 to have my story in the Post Gazette, she's doubtful. Yeah, she'll probably try to find a discount. Somebody.
Maybe this book will be a big hit, and we'll cover it for you.
But should just say, wait, if you want his story, you buy his book.
Right.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
You want to read it?
You pay me $50.
That's funny. And what are, you know, you've taken this subject that people consider to be maudlin and sad and depressing, and you've kind of lightened it up in the sense that celebrate the life. Don't necessarily mourn the death.
It's
celebrate the life. But what are your thoughts on death and dying? I mean, when you think about that journey, I start to question my mortality a little bit more as I get older. I start taking tests that I've never taken before, just to kind of check, you know, and see where I'm at. I took a CT lung scan because I've been a 30-year smoker.
Unremarkable, I hear.
Yeah, that's the one time you want to be unremarkable is after a CT lung scan. Everything came back unremarkable. But that's, I'm kind of curious. I don't know how old you are.
I'm 66.
Okay, so you got a couple years on me. I'll be 64. Are your thoughts different about death at 66 as they were at, say, 46?
Not really. I don't really think about it that much. I never did. And writing obituaries, I don't think about it because, to me, the obituary is not about death. It's about the life.
Mm-hmm.
And the death is just the pretext for telling a story.
Sure.
I always say, you know, if obituaries can't be fun, what's the point of dying?
Right. Right. Which is exactly what I said at the beginning. Yeah. When I go, I want people to be laughing.
That should be the title of the episode.
When you die, your friends and family, they're going to need to cry, but they're going to need to laugh too.
Sure.
If you go to a funeral, the best parts are the eulogies where somebody mm-hmm. mentions the deceased's odd habits.
Yeah. And, right.
Or the party afterwards.
Some of the crazy things he did. Yeah. And when you are allowed to laugh like that, it's a big relief because you realize that, the person's not really gone entirely. We still have all of these memories. We're going to keep these memories.
Do you have an example of one that you could think of off the top of your head that you kind of remember to still, that kind of stays with you, that you could share with us?
An obituary that I've written?
Yes.
Your favorite.
The Pulitzer winning obituary.
The Pulitzer Prize of obituaries.
Yeah, well, the one in the Wall Street Journal today I thought was kind of interesting about a guy named Albert Okura, who was a Japanese-American, grew up in Los Angeles, born in 1951. And he said being an Asian-American, when he was in high school, everybody thought that he was, he must be going to Harvard or Stanford, but he wasn't really a great student. What he really liked was fast food. And so he went to work for Burger King, and eventually he started his own restaurant chain called Juan Pollo, and his goal was to be the biggest chicken seller in the entire world. He thought really big, and he didn't see why he couldn't become that. And he didn't quite make it. He had 25 restaurants when he died at age 71, all in Southern California.
But not bad.
Not bad. And he was thinking long term. He had a 50-year plan, business plan, which called for him to be number one in 2050.
Oh.
Ah.
So he still might get it.
His sons are running the restaurant. They might make it.
They might go there.
But he had a great sense of humor. He wrote a very funny book about his life. And I couldn't have really written about him if he hadn't written his own story, because I wouldn't have understood him well enough to make an interesting story.
Yeah.
What's the most, with over 900 obituaries written for the Wall Street Journal, can you say which one has been the most famous one that you've written?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Are they all famous? Or are they
No. They're not all.
I don't write that many stories about famous people because I'm supposed to write about business people. And
all right,
I'm supposed to write for the weekend
Wall
paper.
Gotcha.
And, if a very famous business person dies on Monday, we're going to have that story right away.
Right.
So I need something for Saturday. So I find people who usually are not all that well-known but have interesting stories.
Like this businessman.
Right, right.
But if
I just got an email from somebody saying, I didn't know somebody had 25 restaurants would rate an obituary. But I said, well, it's not, the question is, do you have a good story? It's not, how much money you made or what your title was. There are some people, they have a great resume. They've been CEO of this and they've got won 18 awards and they've got all kinds of honors and achievements, and they went to Harvard. But
who cares?
If there's no story to go with it,
right,
it's boring.
Yeah.
And there probably is a story, but sometimes that story is just lost because that person never confided, didn't give interviews, didn't write anything. And so I'm not going to write it.
Dang. I'm getting kind of hungry for that chicken.
That kind of chicken.
So that's hungry.
So I mentioned Warren Buffett. If Warren Buffett were to die, God bless him, tomorrow, would you write that obituary for the Wall Street Journal?
His obituary has been written long ago.
I know it was. It's already it's already written.
We talk about that all
it's
the time.
It's already
at work.
Written. It's like already said and done.
Jimmy Carter, right now. God bless him. He's on knocking on heaven's door. How long has his obituary been written? And not necessarily by you, but by the understood you.
I assume for 25 or 30 years, and it's had to be updated.
Updated, right? Had, right, yeah.
So that's what major papers do. It's a good idea, I think, because you can actually interview people.
Is there anybody? Is that somebody's job just to like find old folks and write about them? You know, like Bob Dylan, you're gonna die soon.
You're gonna die soon. Let's get your obituary written.
You
know,
because you could have you could hire somebody full time just to work on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, the New York Times certainly has people who do that more or less full time. They've got thousands ready. I think at the Wall Street Journal we probably have hundreds ready. But yeah, it's an investment of time. It's a good idea. And so that's for famous people. But the rest of us should think about that too. We should be preparing to leave behind a story, and you can't leave it until you're on your deathbed, because you're not going to be in any condition to write something down.
Damn details. Which you mentioned famous people, it's like sometimes it's like that's already been written, that's already been done. There's an actress who died recently, Melinda Dillon, who was the mom in Christmas Story. Okay, right, she passed away in January. We didn't find out about it in the press until February.
Interesting.
And they mentioned the fact that it was reported by the Neptune Society, and I googled the Neptune Society, and the Neptune Society, I thought it was some crazy Hollywood. No, it was a crematorium. It was a crematorium. And they released the info, and I thought, there's this person who was an Academy Award nominated actress, I think for Close Encounters, did some wonderful work, The Mom and Christmas Story.
Beloved.
And when she died, it wasn't released the next day or the third day even. It almost didn't come out a month later. And I think that, and I read just those things. You know, they mentioned her credits and so forth. But then, where was her story? Why was her story not reported? Why did it take a crematorium to release the fact that she, you know, that she was deceased? And
I mean, she probably hadn't made any arrangements for it. Maybe she didn't care about it, or just didn't get around to it. And maybe her family
was
not into these kinds of things. Some families some people are not too interested in that. Some people think it's an invasion of their privacy. Yeah. So sometimes there is no announcement, and you know, papers maybe find out about it 6 months or a year later, and maybe we'll still write about it. But there's no, you know, automatic way that newspapers would know if somebody has died unless a phone call is made or an email is sent.
Can't read about it in the paper.
Yeah. Well, I mean, often we find out because somebody has purchased a death notice in a local paper or in the New York Times, and that's where you read about it. And then you call them up and say, you know, you'd like to know more.
Where do you live?
In
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
I like Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh? Well, yeah. He's got a book signing.
It's worth it.
Just to be here?
No, he indulged us by coming here a day early.
Oh. Yes, very nice.
I think this whole conversation has just been interesting and fascinating.
The book was
amazing,
too, by the way. We didn't even really touch on that, and I won't bring it up because it'll be another hour, but just the newspaper industry. Like that interests me so much that you work in. You live in Pittsburgh, but you probably just type stuff up and email it in, and boom.
It doesn't matter.
I just like the fact that he's still publishing in a newspaper. I am a fan of newspapers, and the fact, you know, I even though I'm trampled upon on a regular basis, I will raise my head. Print's not dead, you know, despite the fact that social media is trampling upon me and saying, what, read?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, well, most people read online today. And that,
I don't like to read it online.
Yeah, well, but it's fine with me. I mean, that's the way it's going. And you get a lot of value online. You have to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, people don't like that idea. They always want me to give them the article for free. I can email somebody, you know, if I interview them, I'll email them a link to it, but that's a one-time link. I'm not going to send it to 100 of them to all of their friends.
I was a paper boy.
So was I. That's a great training.
Yeah.
So was the Chicken Man. That's
the Chicken Man was a paper boy as well.
His mom insisted.
You may have a chicken franchise in your future, Chip.
That's what I'm missing.
Yeah, that was great training for kids. You know, you're 11 years old, you've got a big financial responsibility. I was, you know, collecting money from 70 houses. I had to collect that money to pay for the papers. Yeah.
You had a route. 70 houses.
Try collecting from 70 houses. You know,
I'll pay it next week.
Pay up.
Right.
I'll pay it next week. Get out of here. Right. Yeah. Because then you have to develop some character. Like, no, I need paid now, sir.
I would go from house to house collecting, and Chips was playing on every TV, so I'd be able to watch an entire episode while I waited for payments.
That's hilarious.
Broken up as I walked from house to house.
So Chips.
Chips.
That's where you got your name. Chips.
Yeah.
And Chip was watching Chips while he was collecting.
Chip was watching Chips.
That's something weird.
His real name is Ed.
There's a lot of serendipity there.
I have one more question.
Go ahead. We got to start wrapping things up, though.
So, what I like about it is you've made it clear, like, you're not dwelling on the morbid part. You know, you're more about the story, the life. However, one of my hobbies and what I like is cemeteries and ghost hunting and that kind of thing. Are you drawn to those types of interests?
No, although we could get Lorraine to come over and tell about the time she saw a ghost.
Don't tempt me, Lorraine.
But I have no experience with ghosts or believe in them.
Fair enough. But a lot of it is storytelling.
Well, cemeteries are fascinating.
They're beautiful places.
Yeah.
They're beautiful, beautiful spiritual places that have a lot of stories. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody there had a huge story.
Yeah. I got a discussion about that too. Like saying, like, well, you want to be cremated? I go, yeah, I do. But you're still going to have a tombstone. Like, no, I wasn't planning on that.
Mm-hmm. The Catholics say that you have to be buried. You cremated, but you still get buried and have a tombstone. That's what Frank says.
Ka-ching.
Yeah.
One of my readers who's a lawyer wrote to me and told me that he's already written his own epitaph, and I think it was a really good one. It's going to be on his gravestone. He made the best of a bad situation that he himself created.
There you go.
I think I'd like that to be on my tombstone.
That's awesome. And that is the out, my friend, right there. That is a great way to close this up. Our guest is James R. Haggerty. The book is yours truly. Tell us where everybody can get it, how they can get it.
You can get it online anywhere. Go to your local bookshop and ask for it. If they don't have it, act amazed, but they'll be very happy to order it for you, and you'll be supporting a bookseller.
And I can go to Amazon.com and get it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, for sure, right?
And Wall Street Journal? I mean, do you have yourself social media? Your Twitter account, I assume?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. Facebook, LinkedIn.
All those? I'm going to start following you on LinkedIn.
Not TikTok.
No TikTok videos?
Yeah.
Dancing skills aren't good enough.
Yeah. James R. Haggerty, Wall Street Journal. Still writing for the Wall Street Journal as we speak.
Yes.
And we'll continue to write obituaries about chicken men and meat men and
I'll continue to be employed until they hear this podcast.
All right. You think? Oh,
you will be the first person that happened to
you.
Yeah, it would be.
No, they'll consider you to be gracious that you spent some time.
No, I think I'll get extra credit.
Extra credit? It's a nice way to close it out.
There you go.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Much success with the book and anything else you do in the future. And thank you so much for spending some time with us. I can't do the podcast without the following individuals. Greg Hansberry on the audio side, John Whitney on the video side, on all sides, Chip Cosell hanging back there. I want to thank Jeff Gates for sponsoring our guest bottle, the Benchmark Bonded. We like it.
It's good.
It's a great everyday pour. If you can find it, buy it. My name is Dino Tripodis, and until the next bottle, see ya.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On PressBox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on PressBox Access.